following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 209, recorded on Thursday, February 9th, 2017. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Coming up on this episode, humans probably couldn't live on Second Earth Proxima B. Katie Sackhoff tapped to star in sci-fi thriller Origin Unknown. And scientists explain people's obsession with UFOs and alien abductions. Before all that, though, our question...
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
Who would win in a fight, a xenomorph or a predator? Every time, Brad, every week, you go...
Well, you ask the tough questions, Mr. Nelson.
I'm like Morley Safer.
You know, I'm going to go with xenomorph.
And you have to explain your reasons.
My reason is acidic blood.
Mm. Very good point.
There could be assured mutual destruction if the predator gets the drop on a xenomorph, he can just... give him a nice acid-laden hug and just hold on to him until he just disintegrates.
Plus, there's that second mouth.
Yes.
Has there been three mouths before? There's been... No?
No.
Okay.
Not that I recall.
All right. Because no. That's just overkill. Three.
That's the bridge too far.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Do you have a differing opinion on this, Anessa?
No, that was going to be my answer.
You don't think that the predator's savvy? I mean, they're bred to fight, right? They're bred for battle. They're bred for hunting. Don't you think they would be prepared for acid-like blood?
Not necessarily for the acid-like blood. If they were, say, targeting the xenomorph from a distance, I think they would stand a better chance. But, like, up close, hand-to-hand combat, not so much. Even with the predator's ability to become invisible, I kind of think that the xenomorph does a really great job of sensing things and where things are. So I think the xenomorph would probably pick up where the predator is and then go after it. So, I guess it kind of depends if they're like, you know, just a couple feet away from each other fighting, throwing punches and stuff, then I would say the xenomorph. But if they're having like a shooting battle, I don't recall seeing the xenomorph really shoot anything, then
no.
The predator would win.
All right. We have a winner. The xenomorph would win. Have you guys ever seen the Alien versus Predator movies? Have we determined? Has this been determined already?
I don't think I've ever seen them all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces. I've just never watched it all the way through.
No.
I've never watched any of those. What kind of alien expert am I?
We're terrible alien experts. I'm just saying.
We never said we were experts, or we were experts, really. We're just kind of...
It's true. We're just people who talk about aliens.
Yeah.
I think on an intimidation factor, like... the xenomorph to me is creepier than the predator. Because, I mean, well, up until the predator does his weird little mouth thing where it kind of like goes, ah!
How's that go?
I can totally see what I'm doing. But, you know, it's like the weird dislocating jaw thing and it like opens way wide. And it seems to be a lot more common now in horror flicks, like that particular thing. But, to me, like the... xenomorph just seems a little more intimidating anyway. Just, you know, the acidic blood, the little mouth popping out from inside the mouth. You're like, how many mouths do you need?
And they give you the side eye.
Yep.
Yep.
So, just saying. Yeah.
Okay, we have a winner. The winner is Xenomorph.
Woo!
In the news.
There was a lot of talk last year about the exoplanet that was considered to be a second Earth, and it was called Proxima B. Now, NASA has new data which states that the star that it is orbiting is destroying the planet with high energy X-rays. And yeah, it would be very hostile to human life. So here we go. When Proxima B was discovered, it was dubbed Second Earth because of its potential to host life. NASA has now said this is unlikely. The exoplanet, which is the closest to Earth, but still 4.5 light years away, orbits the star Proxima Centauri. It is said to lose too much oxygen to be able to host liquid water on its surface. Considering the host star's age and the planet's proximity to its host star, the scientists expect that Proxima B is subjected to torrents of X-ray and extreme ultraviolet radiation from super flares occurring roughly every 2 hours. This indicates, according to the study published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, that all oxygen would escape from Proxima B's atmosphere in 10 million years. Magnetic activity and stellar winds impacting the exoplanet's atmosphere led the authors of the study to conclude it's quite unlikely Proxima B is habitable. We have pessimistic results for planets around young red dwarfs in this study, but we also have a better understanding of which stars have good prospects for habitability. This is from Vladimir Arapethin, the paper's lead author. Astrophysicists are searching for other habitable planets as potential locations for future populations of humans. NASA boss Charles Bolden has previously claimed humanity needs to be a multi-planet species to survive, as has SpaceX boss Elon Musk. The researchers developed a new model that estimates how much oxygen escapes on planets around red dwarfs. When the scientists accounted for superflares, their new model indicates the violent storms of young red dwarfs generate enough high-energy radiation to enable the escape of even oxygen and nitrogen, building blocks for life's essential molecules. The team added that its model could be or should be applied to potential habitable exoplanets that give off X-ray and higher ultraviolet levels than our own sun. For exoplanets orbiting a star with mild space weather environment, the old definition of a habitable planet should be used. And this article came to us from wired.co.uk.
That is a bummer because people were really pinning their hopes on this because the planet was so close.
Yep.
Now, do we know if there's any other planets closer than that? Or other systems?
I don't think, because that was, 4.5 light years away? I think that was the closest.
Oh.
If I'm recalling. Because I know that, Stephen Hawking and the Russian billionaire were talking about using the laser propulsion system to send off, the smaller craft to investigate Proxima B. Because it was so close.
I wonder if
it would take, 20 years to get there.
I wonder if this is going to put a stop to that, or are they going to go ahead anyways? I mean, it would still be interesting, right?
It would be interesting, and it would be a great test run because it is so close. That would give them an opportunity to work out bugs and figure out other, test the technology and see what they can improve upon. So I think it's still a viable location to check out.
I never really thought that I'd never thought to take into account the different type of star, how that would affect the environment or, you know, the habitability of planets orbiting the red dwarf.
The size, the heat.
Yeah,
I guess
it adjusts the habitable zone for sure. I mean, we've talked about that in the past, depending on the brightness of the star, the type of star it is, that alters the golden zone, the golden habitable zone, for what planets get the love and what planets do not. So
with a red dwarf, is there a possibility for no habitable planets orbiting? Is it like just does it totally void out the possibility of life?
I don't think it does. I think that because Proxima B is within the range of those super flares, well, you know, I clipped a little bit out of the article, but I'm not sure exactly what I clipped out.
It's okay. I was just curious.
That's a very good question because, it would depend on, the type of, like they were saying, the type of solar weather that sun generates. It could still have a decent habitable zone and it could support life. But if it's being pummeled by flares because of, what stage it is in its life cycle, that would change.
Well, it's not just the star, but if with the red dwarf, you've got a small area for like a habitable zone. And then if your planet that's orbiting the red dwarf ends up becoming tidally locked, kind of like how we are with the moon, then only one side of the planet is ever going to face the sun. And so that's probably going to lower your odds of having life. But you never know. There are extremophiles. Of course, there's the weather, I suppose, on the sun. But the nice thing about red dwarves is that they do have a long lifespan. So if you think about the cool thing about stars is there's a wide spectrum of them. And a red dwarf would be on the cooler end of the spectrum, so it's not expelling as much energy as, say, a white star. Because despite when we draw pictures of something and you think red is hot, if you're actually, starting a fire and you notice that you've got, like, some blue and some white flames, that's actually, like, the hotter temperatures. So those are expelling more energy and, you can only keep that up for so long. So I guess it's kind of like slow and steady wins the race, kind of.
So you want to be orbiting tortoise.
You don't necessarily want to be orbiting a red dwarf, but, you could orbit a yellow star like our sun.
So you want to be orbiting
the middle, lower end. Probably won't want to orbit a brown dwarf, but
you're,
I don't know.
You're messing up my analogy, Anessa.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you don't want to be orbiting a tortoise planet. You want to be...
Although slow and steady wins the race.
Well, okay. I screwed up my own analogy. Sorry.
It's like the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise wins.
You want to be in the...
you don't want to be on the rabbit.
Okay.
There you go. You don't want to be on the rabbit planet. Plus, it would be overpopulated with rabbits.
It's filthy with rabbits all over the place.
Filthy with rabbits.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
How are you guys doing? What was your week like?
Filled with work.
Oh.
Icy weather.
Tuesday, Alex did not have school because of the icy weather, so I got to stay home. That was kind of nice.
I had to go to work.
Yes, Anessa had to go to work, though.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that you have your child is the excuse that you have to stay home.
Well, kind of a bummer thing, and everybody at work was really bummed, because in the past, when the schools in town would close, so would my work. And it's like everybody that I worked with that had kids, once they got that phone call or text message at like 6 o'clock in the morning that, you know, classes were canceled for today, like the rest of us were like, what about work? Can, like, are we going to not have work today? And then we had work today or that day. And then we were like all really bummed about it. So
well, that sucks.
Kind of a bummer.
That really sucks.
Yeah. But you know, it's whatever. The nice thing was it was a quiet day at work, because, you know, a lot of people didn't want to go out in the icy weather. And I got quite a bit done. So yay me.
Yeah, we had the same storm you guys did. We're still dealing with the ice-covered snow in the back in the backyard. Oliver wants – he loves to climb on top of the snowbanks. Because I made, like, we've had a nice path for him, like a circular path all winter. But he doesn't like to walk on the path. He likes to walk on the snowbank aside the path. So it's kind of funny to watch him. And I feel bad for him, too, because he's trying to walk normally, but the snow is all icy and it's impossible. It's impossible to
he's
stay.
He's a very determined dog, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, he loves being on top of the snow. He loves snow, period. So
should get him like little snowshoes. Do they make those for dogs?
We have little galoshes. We have these rubber galoshes and like an actual shoe that goes over it, but they're almost impossible to put on. So the most covered up we've made him has been, he's got a little red jacket and it's cute.
Aw.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need that extra little bit of warmth whenever they go outside in like super cold temps.
He doesn't, the cold weather doesn't seem to faze him at all, though. He's like,
no.
Let's go. I don't care.
Come on, guys, let's go.
Yeah, I'll be outside in the back like, come on, let's go, hurry it up. It's cold over here. He's like, he's chewing on ice and he's, you know, doing his dog
having
thing.
The time of his life. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Great time to be alive in negative 10 degrees.
Yeah. Wee-hee. Katie Sackhoff is going to star in a sci-fi thriller called Origin Unknown. What, the last time we saw her was in Longmire?
Probably. Although she was in another horror flick not too long ago, or it's just now coming out, I forget.
Don't Knock Twice? Is that what it's called?
Maybe. Okay. I just remember seeing the previews. I don't remember the name of the movie, though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I do remember seeing the previews as well.
Terrible with names.
Yeah.
Sorry.
After the... okay, so here's the synopsis of this movie called Origin Unknown. After the first manned mission to Mars ends in a deadly crash, mission controller Mackenzie Mack Wilson, played by the Battlestar Galactica actress, is summoned to assist an artificial intelligence system, ARTI. The investigation uncovers a mysterious object under the surface of Mars, leading to a discovery that could change the future of our planet as we know it. And this is according to the press release. Principal photography on the film begins later this month in London, England. Or is it London, Ontario?
Could be London, Texas. I'm just saying.
London's all over the place. All over the damn place.
London, Texas is a blinkin' you miss it kind of place.
Hey, but it'd be,
I've been through it many, many times.
Perfect for a stand-in for Mars, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not quite. It's not that red.
So it's going to be good or to dead. See Starbuck back in the flight suit again. It'll be sort of like a flight suit that she wears, I'm sure.
Probably.
Nothing. Yeah.
I wonder if they'll do the, what do you hear, Starbuck? Just kind of a nod.
That would be cool.
Nothing but the rain, sir.
That would be really cool, like a little Easter egg. You know, squeeze it in there somehow.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Make, you know, not exactly that, but, you know, maybe a version.
Right. Kind of a loose quote.
Yeah.
Paraphrase?
Yeah, paraphrase. Exactly.
Or even if they just, you know, like, do you hear anything? And then she'd be like, nothing but the rain.
Nothing but the rain.
So that would be a nice nod.
So there seems to be a lot of...
I think it'd be easier to do that than to say, get your gun and bring the cat in.
Yeah. That's a little bit harder to work into the conversation, I'm guessing.
Yep. So, anyway, continue.
So I was going to say that there seems to be a lot of Mars movies recently because I did two stories in one here. In other movie news, during the Super Bowl on Sunday, the first full-length trailer for Life premiered. Did you guys see it? The trailer for Life?
No.
No.
Bowl.
This would have been easier to talk about if you guys would have seen it. If this conversation falls flat, I blame you guys.
We're cord cutters, so...
Well, although no. I did stream the halftime show through the Fox Go app.
But you know what? They put these things online, right? They don't just keep them on the TV.
What? That's what I said. I streamed the halftime show through the Fox Go sports app. And then the Super Bowl was kind of playing in the background while I was cooking in the kitchen. And then Dave changed the thing to something else.
Okay. Because
nobody was really watching it.
Okay. Anyways, so Ryan Reynolds, Jake Gyllenhaal, they're part of a 6-member crew on the International Space Station that uncovers what looks to be the first evidence of life on Mars. As they begin to conduct routine research on the specimen, they soon discover it will be capable of far more than they could ever expect, and that its intentions are far more murdery than one would have hoped. So they want to, they're not friendly, sounds like.
All the murder.
Yeah. So let me explain the trailer just a little bit for you. I won't spoil the whole thing, but they basically bring the specimen into the laboratory, and there's one guy in there, and he's doing all the work. And he's adding.
Oh, we saw that. We saw that preview when we saw. Crap! What was the last movie we saw in the theater? That's one.
Rogue One.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds is crying in that one scene because they're on. The guy gets his hand nipped by.
Yeah.
We saw the trailer.
Okay, so did you see the part where they
Rogue One?
He kept on adding oxygen, and the more oxygen he added, the more alive the creature became. Or the more it grew? Was that part of the one that you saw?
No. We did, because you didn't get to see the creature in the one that we saw.
You sort of see it in this one. So this is a brand new trailer. It's a full-blown trailer. So I'll put it in the show notes, and you guys, you can check it out, and the listeners can check it out. But it looks pretty awesome. I don't remember the release date. I think it's in March. I think it's next month, actually. It's not that far away. Maybe I'll look it up. You guys discuss how excited you are for the upcoming movie season, which is starting very soon. Logan is going to be released very soon. That looks pretty good.
Yes.
I've not seen the trailer.
Life comes out March 24th. So it's a little over a month away.
I still want to see Hidden Figures.
That looks pretty good. Looks very good.
I've heard good things, but I don't know how much longer it's going to be in the theaters. And crappy weather keeps rolling through for date night.
And illness.
And illness. Well, the great, so it's like I'm never going to see it.
Well, the great thing is it's the movies don't go away. They come out in other forms. So you'll be able to see it someday.
Hopefully.
They don't just go away.
Are you sure?
This is not the 1950s.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
So accounts of mysterious flashing lights in the sky, spacecrafts, and encounters with, quote, real aliens reflect high levels of public interest in UFOs and the belief that there is something out there. However, many psychologists are less convinced and think they can provide more down-to-earth scientific explanations. Belief in aliens has increased steadily since the birth of modern alien research in the 1940s and 50s, following news surrounding a classified U.S. military project at Roswell Air Force Base in New Mexico. Surveys in Western cultures estimate belief in aliens to be as high as 50% in 2015. And despite the fact that it is considered rare, a significant number of people also believe they have experienced alien abduction. Present-day awareness of alien abduction dates to the 1961 case of Betty and Barney Hill, who witnessed the odd lights and experienced missing time and lost memories while driving. And we've talked about them before.
Numerous times.
And it's once again. So, the reported consequences of abduction are often less loss of memory, missing time, and problems such as sickness, sleepwalking, nightmares, and psychological trauma. Following their experience, Betty and Barney experienced psychological problems and subsequently sought therapy. Although the accuracy of the numbers is questioned, a poll by Roper Center for Public Opinion Research conducted 30 years after this account said that around 3.7 million Americans believed that they've experienced alien abduction. Skeptics argue that alien-related encounters are merely hoaxes created for financial gain or social advantage. Perhaps Roswell is the most famous example. Initial reports in the 1940s, you know, like, they reported a downed craft, they thought it was UFO, alien, and then they're like, nope, just kidding, weather balloon. So, so in this case, it would, you know, there's a cover-up, it could be a hoax, it's whatever you think it might be. So going on, they talk about personality traits. One explanation is as far as people's aliens encounters. So one explanation is that when people believe they have had an experience of alien abduction, they have misinterpreted, distorted, and conflated real and imagined events. Hence, skeptics of alien encounters explain them away in terms of psychological processes and personality characteristics. Several studies report that experiences do not typically differ from non-experiencers on objective psychopathological measures, those that assess psychological well-being and adjustment and have no history of mental instability. However, one characteristic that is associated with abduction experiences is a proclivity for fantasy. Mixed evidence supports the hypothesis that fantasy-prone people engage in elaborate imaginings and often confuse fantasy with reality, which I kind of thought was interesting after my pick last week, which now I can't think of the name. It was like Confessions of an Alien Abductee.
That's exactly what it was called.
And what, like, watching that and reading this article, I can see how that applies to the people in that documentary, at least some of the people in that documentary. So Anyway, psychologists argue that hypnosis encourages the creation and recall of detailed fantasies, which is true. Well, we've talked about that. and how hypnosis, depending on the person conducting the hypnosis, can be very leading. So if you just say, hey, what happened? And then the person goes on and tells you the story. But then you have another person that would be like, hey, what happened when you saw the lights hovering above your car? You know? So
leading the witness.
There's some molding of the story, some altering. So anyway. It's going through this, and it goes back to talk about Betty and Barney Hill and how the details of their event came out mostly while they were under hypnosis. So it could be that they were very susceptible to false memory. So who knows? The next thing that they talk about is brain sensitivity. Studies suggest that neuropsychological hypotheses, particularly sleep paralysis and temporal lobe sensitivity, also could explain claims of alien abduction. Sleep paralysis is a feeling of being conscious but unable to move, which occurs when a person passes between stages of wakefulness and sleep. Experiencers claims share characteristics with sleep paralysis: a sense of being awake, not dreaming, and realistic perceptions of the environment, the inability to move, a feeling of fear or dread, and the sense of another presence, perhaps evil or malevolent, are common symptoms. Which kind of goes with hauntings, too.
Yeah.
Not just alien abductions.
Matt Stein and I have talked about that many times on Weird World Weekly, because there are... That goes back to... There's a creature that is known through mythology called something hag. What's it called again?
Oh, yeah.
The old hag, or I forget now. I'm like, I had this great point, but then I'm like, oh, I forgot the name. Something hag, where
it's old hag syndrome.
Yeah, throughout history, there's been this stories that people think that they wake up and the old hag is on their chest, basically taking their breath away. But what it is sleep paralysis. And there's other, when you have sleep paralysis, other things kind of manifest themselves. Like you
I've
think.
I've experienced that twice.
Yeah. Your mic's off, by the way, Brad.
Oh. I've experienced that twice.
Really?
Sleep paralysis, yes.
Was it just, like, what was it like? What all did you experience?
The first time it happened, all I saw was like white. And I couldn't move my arms or my legs. And I just laid there and I was like, I have no idea what's happening. And then the white kind of started to look a little bit more like almost like static from a TV. And then I started to realize that I was sleeping at a in-law's house, and I was looking at the ceiling tiles. Like my eyes slowly started to the muscles relaxed enough where I could actually focus my eyes on stuff. And yep. After that, then I kind of relaxed a little bit, but it took like about, it felt like about 10 minutes before it gave way and I could actually move again.
Weird.
But it was scary at first. And then the second time it happened, I'm like, oh, this again. Okay. So.
Sleep paralysis, my old friend.
You did not experience the old hag?
The night hag. Night apparently. Hag. Oh, it's further in the story. Derp. So anyway. A skeptic, Michael Shermer, once collapsed from sleep deprivation following an 83-hour bike race, and his support team rushed to his aid. Shermer was caught in a waking dream and so perceived them as aliens from the 1960s television series The Invaders. It also explains some ghost sightings, such as the night hag, often experienced by those who suffer from sleep paralysis. temporal lobe sensitivity is a hypothesis that suggests the temporal lobes of some of people's brains are more vulnerable to influence from low-level magnetic frequencies. Michael Persinger, a neuroscientist at Laurentian University in Canada, is among those who believes that increased temporal lobe activity can explain paranormal experiences such as alien abduction. His hypothesis is that magnetic fields stimulate the temporal lobes, resulting in hallucinatory experiences similar to those reported by alien abductees. None of this is to say that many people who believe they have experienced alien abduction are liars, merely that their accounts and experiences can be explained through recourse to hypotheses with a scientific basis. There are many logical, plausible scientific explanations, none of which rely upon the existence of aliens. However, it should also be noted that not all reported alien abduction experiences can be easily explained by any of those scientific hypotheses, and this throws up many more questions. And I found that on sciencealert.com. I just thought it was really interesting and ties into my pick from last week, because I do really think that some of those individuals, it's their minds, well, trying to cope with their circumstances, whether it was like in their childhood or the loss of a loved one, whatever other issues might be going on there. Maybe they're not sleeping enough. I just found this article really interesting in the way in which it could possibly explain some alien abductions.
By the way, Laurentian University is in Sudbury, Ontario, home of Alex Trebek.
just think of a Saturday Night Live.
Why?
Oh, with
you wouldn't be so smart if you didn't have those cards, Trebek.
I like when which character always gets mispronounces the words on the board.
Sean Connery,
the rapist,
the penis mightier.
That's the pen is mightier.
That's funny.
So, anyway.
Very interesting.
I just thought that was interesting.
Very, very interesting, yeah. You don't really, you kind of take all that stuff for granted. Like, you don't really think about the psychology or the science behind that kind of thing. But I could totally see all those factors kind of playing in.
Oh, yeah. And, like, that one individual who had been up for 83 hours and had a waking dream where he thought that it was aliens, mm-hmm. and it was the people around him trying to like help him because he had passed out from exhaustion. So yeah, it's really interesting to see how it changes our perspective as to like how we feel or perceive things as happening to us versus what people that are awake and conscious are seeing and experiencing. So I thought that was a wonderful example that they used.
The mind is a crazy thing.
It is. Crazy.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Brad, what do you got this week for sightings?
I went to UFO Sightings Daily, Scott C. Waring's website.
Yes.
You're welcome. And this is really, really fascinating. And I'm going to attempt to... There we go. I'm doing a screen share right now. I don't know if you'll be able to see this, but this is an alien craft that was flying over buildings in Bangalore, India. Not Indiana, India. Now,
whoa.
And especially in this image here, it looks like a whale with a very large hang glider.
You would need a large hang glider if a whale wanted to hang glide.
It honestly, I saw that and I'm like, oh my God, when did whales start hang gliding? You know, and this is like an extreme blow up of a lower resolution video. What I'm going to do here is I am going to switch everything back to our regular cameras, and I'm going to talk about this particular sighting. In the video, and we'll have the link in the show notes here, but in the video, we're going to describe it. You can see an unidentified flying object moving across the sky from one side of town to the other in just a few moments. Its silent and smooth movement is incredible, but its design, two discs, one above another, that is really baffling to me. I have never seen a UFO like this before. It's really got me scratching my head about this one.
Is this Brad Ludwig? Is this Brad Ludwig talking, or is this Scott C. Waring talking?
No, this is Scott C. Waring
okay.
talking. This video really blew me away when I saw the craft passing behind the buildings. What this tells me is that the UFO was huge. Hugely huge.
Huge.
I am talking city bus size. It looks bigger than that, but it's hard to say. And it passed extremely close to these buildings. No jet engine heard, no propellers or wings detected. And from the looks of it, no one on the ground seems to have any idea what the heck this could be other than an alien craft. Now, are you all right over there?
I'm not done sneezing. I'm sorry.
It's an alien virus. That's the only okay. explanation.
Here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the setup that I had before. And this video is about a minute, just under 2 minutes long, but this thing's clipping a good pace.
Yeah, it is. And by the way, if for the people listening, you'll be able to watch the video of this podcast on our YouTube channel.
Now, they say that it looks like it's probably the size of a bus, but it really looks like, what is it, in Dubai. And this was the White Rabbit Project, which is the show that...
The old Mythbusters B team.
Yeah, the Tori Grant and Kari are doing this show called The White Rabbit Project. And in one of them, they did, I think it was the first episode where they talked about superpowers and how to basically simulate them. And Kari talked to a guy who... is in, was it Kari? I guess it doesn't matter. But there's a gentleman in Dubai who for the past 30 years has been working on a jetpack. And he can clip a good pace. And he has to wear two parachutes. And this thing is a carbon composite setup with jet engines on it. And you know, it's like $150,000 for one of these things. But this kind of it's moving that fast. This gentleman in Dubai can.
What I don't understand, but I don't understand the whole, okay, didn't they have jetpacks back in the 60s and 70s? I seem to remember seeing that on TV shows and during sports games.
The difference is with this gentleman in Dubai, he's flying horizontally, and able to do really fast maneuvers with it.
Oh, okay.
The ones that other people have made have been more like hover flight.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're doing this liftoff, but you're going straight up and down and you get some forward and maybe some backward movement. But this thing is like a jet engine that in order for him to fly, he needs to be dropped out of a plane or a helicopter. He can't take off from the ground.
Wow.
He can land. And I think that with the fuel that he uses, he's got like about 40 minutes of flight. And then he has to come in for a landing. So, it's pretty amazing. But anyways, yes, this thing is clipping a really fast pace. And I'd really encourage you to check out the show notes. And we'll have the link there for you to be able to see this video. And it's... unidentified flying object that is flying over the city of Bangalore, India.
And I was thinking about
that.
Okay. I had an idea. We should get how they used to rate the sightings if you were a Blue Book, Project Blue Book, like investigator, and put into classifications our sightings each week, like what we think they are, like, highly probable, totally made up, whatever they judged their investigations. We should do that for our sightings. Maybe.
Sure.
I'll look into that and we'll start doing that.
Nice.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Nice work.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making
picks, and... warnings. Alien-related things that we have enjoyed over the last week or so.
Or despised, and we want to make sure that you don't waste your precious moments of this life that you only get one shot at.
That's the...
YOLO!
That's the warning part of the picks and warnings. Anessa, what do you got?
I have a video game that's been around for quite a while now.
Okay, Brad.
Yep. It is Destiny. And it is a first-person shooter. I don't usually do first-person shooters because I'm really bad, but I'm really awesome at bait, being the bait if I play with other people. So Destiny is created by the people who came out with Halo, and the company came out with Call of Duty. So in Destiny, you are a guardian of the last city on Earth, which is really interesting because my first thought was Portal, kind of. Not so much being the guardian on the last city of Earth, but when the video game starts, it kind of gives you a little background as to what's going on, and you see this little thing that reminds me of a companion cube, except it's not quite a cube shaped thing, but it's like floating around and it's looking for you, and it finds you and you're dead, but you end up somehow coming back to life, and I haven't really gotten that far to figure out how that happens, and I assume because it's my destiny to be the guardian. But I'm brought back to life, and you have to make it to the other side of this wall, and you're in Russia, or what used to be Russia. And you end up fighting against these, aliens that are, I think they're called the Fallen, or and you have to try to get off of Earth and go to the last city that you're protecting. And... So, yeah, it's It's fun. I dig the graphics. It is an online game, so you do have to have like the PS4 Plus membership, annual membership, so you can play online against other people. It also has kind of a story mode. It's interesting because it gives you different options. You can play it as a co-op. You can play it through as a story, or you can play with other people fighting to protect different areas. And you get to choose what type of character you are, whether you're like the fighter or kind of a mage class. And as you level up, you get to pick the stats and stuff that you end up upgrading. And so it's got, you know, an RPG vibe to it. But yeah, anyway, Destiny. Like I said, I'm late to the show. It's been around for a while, like 3 years for a while. They have the collection out, but I picked up just the original Destiny for like $5 or $6 used at GameStop. So whoop, whoop, go me.
Anessa, we're not going to judge.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, it's a game that I had heard about and was kind of interested in checking out, even though, like I said, I'm not really a first person shooter type of gal, but I'll do it anyway. But my niece kept asking, like, what games do you play? And I'm like, well, I play a lot of non-first person shooter games. And so I finally asked her, I'm like, so what do you play? And she listed off a bunch of first person shooters. And I was like, Destiny, I will try Destiny. So I got it so I could do something different. And perhaps on some weekends, she and I can go and, you know, protect the last city on Earth.
Nice.
Yeah.
Way to branch out.
Family bonding thing.
Way to get out of your comfort zone.
I know. I'm getting out of my comfort zone. Although I will say that games like Portal and Portal 2 have really helped me with the first person shooter bit. Because initially, like, I was the type of person that, like, I would be running around and forget to adjust the camera. So I'd be running and looking at the ground, which is what I do in real life. I run and I look at the ground so I don't trip and fall. It carries over to the video game world for me.
Hey, it works.
Anyway, Portal, you don't really have that luxury of looking at the ground because you're trying to, like, not get splattered against the wall or fall into some goop that'll kill you. So
what are you going to rate this thing?
I'm going to give it 3 stars at this point.
Anessa.
What?
What?
I'm sorry. 3 flying saucers, which are amongst the stars.
That's better.
My defense, are both in space.
Yes, they are. Maybe. If they exist.
Stars exist.
All right, so I'm going to pick something. This is my pick. It's The Expanse Season 2. It premiered last week. It's on, speaking of space, it's on Space Network here in Canada. It's on Sci-Fi in the States and other platforms and channels around the world, I guess. It's based on the book series, Leviathan Wakes, and I think The Expanse is the title of the next book. I'm not sure. I never got to the second book. But it's really, really cool sci-fi series that takes place in our own solar system in the not-too-distant future, where humanity's kind of spread out. There's the Earth faction, there's the Mars faction, and then the Belters. That's the people that have lived and grown up in the asteroid belt, in the big asteroids out around Jupiter, Saturn, right? That's the Kuiper belt is out there, right? Is it
something like that?
Okay. Well, you know, right? Where's the Kuiper belt? Jupiter?
It. Huh?
It's after Jupiter.
The Kuiper belt is in between. Is it Jupiter and? See, I don't even remember anymore.
Okay.
I don't do astronomy.
I give up. I don't care anymore.
It's further out.
The Kuiper belt, I believe, is after Neptune.
Past Neptune.
Okay.
Between Neptune and Pluto. Right. And then after Pluto, you've got the Oort cloud.
Okay.
Oort cloud.
Oort cloud.
Oort.
So it's not that close to us. It's a little further
out. I ate broccoli and got a case of the Oorts.
Oort.
Happens to me all the time.
Anyways, The Expanse is a really cool show. It's it has been compared to a combination of Game of Thrones and Battlestar Galactica. And this season, it's got an even more Battlestar Galactica feeling because it's involving more military stuff. Because first season, they didn't really, the Martians weren't too involved, but now they're really involved because Earth is kind of like basically sucking them into war under false pretenses. It's a lot of deception, a lot of people lying to get further or trying to protect other people. There's a conspiracy. And yes, because this is the alien invasion, there are aliens involved, although not much has been said about them so far. They're only this extra solar life form that was discovered, and they're being used. Humans are being tested on them. They basically, this life form, you infect humans, and I have it written down. Okay. They can be used to repurpose. Let's see. They can repurpose and use them to evolve humankind, is how they described it. So basically, the aliens use human beings, and the human beings use the aliens. I guess that's the best way to describe it. Anyways, a lot of intrigue, a lot of cool stuff going on. And like I said, it's very much Battlestar Galactica-ish. So if you were a big fan of BSG back in the day, like it was 20 years ago, it wasn't that far along. Well, the original series was back in the 70s.
I was going to say, there's the original.
Yeah. But I'm talking like the reimagined version.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 flying saucers. The Expanse season one, we're up to episode 3. The first episode was 2 episodes. The season 2 premiere was 2 episodes. So the third one was last night, if you understand what I'm getting at.
Yes, maybe.
All right, Brad, what do you got for your pick or warning?
My pick is from 1983.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a show you may have heard of called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
What? No, not familiar.
No.
Don't. Childhood.
No.
And it's currently on Netflix. Now, why would I select this? Well, we know that it takes place on Eternia, right? The thing that you find out in episode 6 of season 1 in an episode called Teela's Quest, Teela being the captain of the guards for King Randor and the royal family. But the one thing that Teela has never found out is who her mother or father are. She was found and then adopted by Man-at-Arms. At the very beginning of this episode, we see that Queen Marlena is she's telling a story. And it's a story of a woman who is flying a ship and then she gets knocked off course. When they pan the camera around, you see that it's Marlena herself. You find out that she was a NASA astronaut who was on a mission to Europa when her ship was hit by an asteroid storm and she was knocked off course. And she ended up crashing on Eternia and falling in love with King Randor. And when two cartoon characters fall in love, they have a little Prince Adam, and that's exactly what happened. And Prince Adam, of course, becomes He-Man. So it was really kind of interesting that in this particular episode, we find out that Prince Adam is half human. He's half Earthling. We also find out who Teela's mother is. But then we find out why she really shouldn't know who her mother is. Dun, dun, dun. I don't want to give it away.
Huh. You little Anyways. Tease.
Sorry?
You little tease.
A little bit of a tease. Like I said, it's on Netflix. The first season is on Netflix. Now, the first season is like 60 episodes. You know, it was designed to be a, you know, like an episode a day show. So there were a lot of episodes made. But first season is available. And like I said, towards the beginning, you get a lot of world building. And also with each episode, a new vehicle or new character shows up. Of course, because He-Man was one of the first. Basically, it was a 30-minute advertisement for toys, which is all He-Man really was. And that was the progenitor of that whole thing. And the reason why they had to have a message about, you know, at the end of every episode, a character would talk about something that happened in the episode. And that was the lesson. That's how that was the loophole to you couldn't have a TV show that was a long form advertisement for toys. There had to be a moral or purpose to the thing. So that's when they added that. And then we started, and then we got to see that in G.I. Joe and some of the other long form cartoon shows that were advertisements for toys. So there you go.
Well, good on them.
He-Man.
Good on them.
Yeah. Filmation created this, and Filmation, because they were making so many episodes, they wanted to be able to recycle as much footage as possible. Orko was originally going to be named Gorpo, and they were going to have a G on his chest. But in order to save money and to save having to animate Orko in different ways, they made his letter an O, so that if you flip the direction of his cells, a G would look funny if it were flipped over. It would look backwards. So they renamed him Orko and gave him the letter O. So little bit of history there.
Can you explain
the reason why I bring?
Okay, go ahead. I was going to ask you to explain Filmation for those that don't know what that means.
Oh, Filmation was a animation studio, not unlike Hanna-Barbera. Hanna-Barbera had the same philosophy to make a lot of cartoons, but to save money by, like Scooby-Doo, they shook the camera. So whenever, somebody fell down the stairs, they would shake the camera while they were doing the cell animation. to get that motion. So a lot of cost saving. I don't want to say cheapness, but a lot of recycling of footage and tricks to save money to so they could get the most for the money they spent and syndicating the shows and whatnot. So anyways, the reason why I brought that up is because a lot of that footage is, by the time you get to episode 12, you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that footage. Yep, I've seen that too. Even though there is a bonus for nostalgia, it's kind of offset by that repetitiveness. So I'm going to give it 2 flying saucers, 2.5 flying saucers. I'll give it a bump. 2.5
All right.
Flying saucers.
At least it's not a zero.
Yeah, not like last week's.
So, in review, Brad had He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I had The Expanse Season 2, and Anessa had the video game Destiny for PS4. All right, and we'll have the links to all of our picks in the show notes, so you can enjoy what we enjoyed or not enjoyed.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe.
or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories that we covered on this episode, click the links in the show notes. We'd also like to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome. You can find out more about that and his other stuff at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. He has a brand new EP out called EP4, and it's pop. He says, watch out, Taylor Swift, Kesha, and Pink. Maybe not. ! Smiley face. Monkey's a great guy. You should check out his music. Again, monkeywarhol.com. Or go to monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com/album/EP4. Just do a Google search. That's the best option, really. Also to Rietwart von Dürrenberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. And finally, thanks to Ben Olson for recording our disclaimer audio at the start of the episode. Find out more about him at benolson.com. Thanks for joining us. Final thoughts. Brad, you're first.
We'll be releasing a new episode of Adventure Party in just a little bit. It'll be episode 48, where we talk with game designer and Emmy Award winner Mike Mylar. And his game that we're talking about, we're going to focus our discussion on the game called Mists of Akuma, but he's worked with a number of different gaming companies, and we get to talk about his career and some of his insights into game design and game development.
All right. Sounds fascinating. And that can be found at gncasts.com/party. Adventure. What are you working on, Anessa? What's your final thought there?
I'm terrible. When Brad said Akuma, I was thinking Akuma Matata.
As one should.
I'm sorry.
It's hard not to.
It's hard not to. But it'll keep the name of the game in my head. So there's that. Whatever works, right?
Yep, exactly. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Woo.
Bye.
Bye. Adios.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.